Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another spoken word edition of the old unspoken decade, the spoken decade, as my co-host Emily Scott likes to call it. I'm Dean Compton, having a great time here February, 3 days from pitchers and catchers. But before my beloved Kansas City Royals start defending their world championship, Emily, we're going to have Punisher on Daredevil Season 2 on Netflix. Emily Scott, I know you're excited about it. I reckon some other crazy kooky cats are excited about it, but ain't nobody more excited about it than me. It's 6 weeks of punishment starting right now. Should have started Saturday. You're getting double dose punishment this week, Emily. Double dose! That was a lot of punches for a double dose.
That was like a quadruple dose.
I think it was five.
I just like how...
Double dose!
If you're at Dragon Con, you're talking about the Royals, if we're doing a comic book podcast... You're also talking about the Royals,
yeah.
But if you're at, say, a Royals game, you'll be talking about the Punisher.
You gotta keep everybody on their toes. Nimble.
But we just saw the trailer today.
Yeah, we did.
For the Punisher on Netflix's Daredevil, and it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, it did. It looks really good. I'm ready to see the skull. I'm sure we'll get to see it. As you said, the skull imagery is everywhere. That's the only letdown for me. Love the skull. It's probably the biggest lacking thing of the Dolph Lundgren straight to DVD Punisher, which is reviled, but I like it. It's probably the best Punisher movie up until now. It's the only one I've ever actually seen because the other two I'm just like, not interesting because it's so far away. Although I have promised to watch Punisher Warzone.
There's no skull.
There's no skull in the first one. No.
Everyone keeps telling me that Dolph Lundgren is supposed to be this really smart guy. How's he gonna
who's telling you this?
He has like advanced degrees.
Oh.
He's actually a very smart, like he's a super smart guy.
I didn't know, like you just made it sound like you were just being like harangued by this like cult of like Dolph Lundgren support. He's like, no man, he's brilliant. Listen up, sister.
That is a fact. People like to shout at you on the internet if you imply that he is not, like, say, like Steven Seagal dumb, for instance.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know anything about him. Good for him. He made for a really good Punisher, made a good movie. No skull. He like, stabs people with the knives that have the skull on the back. It's not the same. But other than that, it's a great trailer, and I think there's probably a lot of people very excited about Elektra, who shows up at the very end of it, but we're not talking about Elektra today, so sorry, folks, if that's what you're about.
Sorry, Jennifer Garner.
Sorry, Frank Miller. Sorry about that, bro. Not talking about Elektra today.
Sorry, not sorry, Frank Miller, about anything.
He did some good work. We'll look at some of his Daredevil work sometime from the 90s. Yeah, Frank Miller, I mean, there's a lot of different things you can say about him. Certainly, I don't want to badmouth the guy too much personally. I know he had some health problems recently, and he certainly has a lot of talent. He and I are like, you know, like the sun Pluto far apart in regards to how we view society and politics, etc. But that's neither here nor there. Believe it or not, it's not a podcast about Frank Miller. It could be. It's not.
Maybe someday.
Probably someday. Get the hits up. Like, put a big name on there. Oh my God, WordPress is going to be like, you're the blog of the decade.
The Unspoken Decade.
The Unspoken Decade, a look at 90s comics, and today we're looking at 1995, August 95, I believe, when this started. Double Edge Alpha was the first issue in the Over the Edge event crossover, which comes at a time when Marvel is going through what I believe was called Marvolution. And Marvolution was this idea that instead of having one editor-in-chief, they'd have a bunch of like smaller imprints that would then each have their own editor-in-chief. So, like, Bobby Chase is the editor-in-chief of the Marvel Edge line, so she's the editor-in-chief of these comics. Which, by the way, I want to take a second to talk about a myth real quick. I got to get a drink real quick, folks. So, hum a tune or something. Excuse me. But I hear a lot that all the time that people are like, oh, Marvel Edge is what led to Marvel Knights. And that's simply not true, people. There's no reason to connect the two other than a lot of the same characters, e.g. Daredevil, Punisher, Doctor Strange, Ghost Rider, that were in Edge would indeed eventually be under Marvel Knights. Marvel Edge is a product of what I said. It's Marvolution. It's still within the company. Nobody licensed anything out. This is all just, it's a corporate restructuring, if you will. Marvel Knights' real precursor is the Heroes Reborn stuff, where Marvel licensed out the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, Thor, Captain America to Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld, basically gave them a huge basket of money and also a tremendously large amount of creative control to kind of reinvent the characters and get a new spin on them. It sold a lot of issues, but eventually Marvel couldn't afford it, so it was a failure in a way. Marvel Knights, they kept a lot more in-house. Like, Marvel Knights had their own, according to Paul O'Connor, when I talked to him, we have an interview with him up here, 70 versus 90s comics. Check it out. It's a fun podcast. But when I talked to him, one of the things that we discussed was in that podcast is that Marvel Knights had its own area in the Marvel building. While they had their own, they had a lot of creative control, they kept them much more closely tethered. In the lessons they kind of learned from Heroes Reborn, they were able to utilize with the Marvel Knights to make that go places. Eventually, Joe Quesada, who was in charge of Marvel Knights, like, he winds up editor-in-chief of the whole company. Another point I like to make to people, that if Edge was the precursor, why did so many characters that weren't Edge characters get Marvel Knights titles? Wolverine, Black Widow, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four. I could go on. But point being, guys, that's a myth, and the more we can do to dispel it, the better.
Every time you say Marvel Knights, I just want you instead to go Marvel Knights.
Marvel Knights.
Like, it's the dark side of Marvel, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the idea. I mean, certainly. And we'll talk about Marvel Knights some other time. We're talking about Over the Edge today. But this was the start of the Edge imprint for Marvel, which it starts off with a bang, Double Edge Alpha. We're going to have a big crossover. They just canceled Punisher Volume 2. The Punisher in a storyline called Countdown. And I can't remember what title it ends in. I think it's Punisher War Journal, but Punisher had three ongoing titles at the time. There was Punisher, Punisher War Journal, and Punisher War Zone. In addition to at least, I don't know, 3,112 different specials and miniseries and guest appearances all the time. So he was overexposed. They had to pull things back. Countdown ended all three of those titles. At the end of it, he ends up in Shield Custody, which, Emily, Shield Custody is where we start Double Edge Alpha, which was written by Larry Hama. And I can't remember who did the art. I know you got some notes over there because you're real fancy.
It was penciled by Cary Gamble and Tom Morgan, inked by Tom Palmer, and colored by Christy Scheel and Ian Laughlin.
Well, Tom Palmer's the man, really big Tom Palmer guy. So, like I said, this starts with Countdown. We start with Frank Castle in Shield Custody, and some mooks show up, and...
Which, the mooks, as you pointed out to me, far too easily smoke shield.
Yeah, I mean...
Just blow them away. Just blow them away. And they're just regular old gangsters.
Well, to be fair, at the start of the issue, it's a bunch of LMDs. Life model decoys. And they've duped the mob. Which it seems to me that SHIELD would just be like, let's just go head-to-head with the mob and use our helicarrier space lasers and, like, shoot them from space and... We won't worry about this mob, but Rosalie Carbone, who was a character from the first arc of Punisher Warzone, which, and again, there's an article about that on the Unspoken Decade. No coincidence, a lot of Punisher stuff. Punisher's my guy. But I think that's the best Punisher story of all time, and that's where she is. She's introduced in that story arc. Well, she's mad because the Punisher seduced her just to kill her family because, you know, I mean, it's because Punisher.
Right, sort of what he does.
And so, like, that's why all these mooks are all out in force against Frank to try and kill Castle while he's in SHIELD custody. Yeah, I mean, it does seem to me that these just, like, they don't even bring in any of, like, the super-powered mob guys, like Tombstone or Hammerhead or Silvermane or, I mean, you could even hire, the goddamn Rhino.
Nope, just some guys.
We got guns!
I just like the idea that somebody had to program the Punisher robot that they think is the Punisher that they are taking out.
Yeah, and you know, they do a good job.
He's very realistic.
I mean...
Because you do... get the Punisher vibe from him. But, you know, I forget.
He's so good, I can't decide that in the real world, you know, is it so good that I want Life Model decoys, or is it so good that I don't?
I think you don't. Knowing how you feel about some other things, I'm going to say no. But I get pleasantly hung up on things like that. Like, that was someone's job, to sit there and be like, well, what's the Punisher like? You've got to make this be realistically the Punisher. So how exactly does the Punisher crack wise? Or, you know, what does he say before he blows the guy away? And he's got to sit there and, like, make all this shit up.
Well, he probably only has, like, 3 eyewitness accounts. Because, like, what does the Punisher say before he shoots you? Who are you going to ask? who's around to tell you what the Punisher said, you know, before he shot? Like, 3 guys. Jigsaw. Because for Christ's fucking sake, for whatever reason, Frank Castle will never kill Jigsaw. And that's really it. I think he's killed Kingpin, maybe? I mean, I guess he's killed everyone else ever.
One issue that I had early on is they never really address what exactly S.H.I.E.L.D.'s plan for him was. Because Fury alludes to, like, well, if it were up to me, we'd just dump you in a hole and be done with you. So clearly that's not what they're going to do with him. But we never in any, like, what, did I miss what they're actually going to do with him? No?
I don't know.
We're on the right.
I have, hey, stop it. I got a little cough I'm trying to suppress. I made a gesture to you to go on. Now I just swallowed the cough and it hurts. Thanks a lot. What a great broadcasting partner.
I thought you were shrugging at me. Yeah, I was like, that's not being a great broadcasting partner. They can't see you shrug.
Yeah, well, you know what? Everyone can see me shrug because it's that it's that ambivalence. Like, oh my God, somebody really doesn't know or care about something.
The International Space Station can see him shrug.
I don't recall if they said in Countdown or not. It's been a long time since I read Countdown. I probably should have read Countdown before we did this. Just to have an idea of what, you know, what was going on. But maybe it was said there what S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to do with him. But every now and then, S.H.I.E.L.D. gets very concerned with Punisher. Every now and then during the 90s, like, the U.S. government would get very concerned with Punisher. But then they just went, whatever, wouldn't care. I mean, how much do you care? That's one of the recurring themes in Punisher whenever, like, you talk about the cops being after him. I mean, for the most part, like, I mean, certainly he should not be doing this, but on the one hand, how hard are you going to look for him? How many resources are you going to expend for a guy who is apparently the most effective weapon against your enemies that you've ever seen? Because as I've said a million times, Punisher is not a person, he's a force of nature.
Well, it makes me think of, like, the old, you know, like a dog chasing a car, but then it catches it and doesn't want to know what to do with it.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about them with the Punisher, because, again, they clearly must have some plan for him. What? Or else they would just make him disappear in one way or another.
Well, but you've seen him be caught before, too, during the final days that you wrote about here on the site.
Yeah, but in this particular instance...
Well, no, I'm just saying that it's a recurring thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't think you ever know what they're really going to do with the... Put him in jail! But no, you know, in this instance, after the end results of this crossover, he will be sentenced to death.
Oh, really?
Yes. He'll be sentenced to fry in the electric chair.
Well, that's a bit of a downer.
Well, guess what? He dies. Yeah. They don't make any more Punisher comics. That's it. That's it. And we're thank God we're here to resurrect this forgotten character known as the Punisher, who isn't going to co-star in a huge Netflix production starting, you know, in March 26th, I want to say. It doesn't matter. I don't work for Netflix. I ain't got to plug it. Sometime in March, folks.
You're right. You don't have to plug it, which is why we're doing 6 weeks of the Punisher to lead up to his premiere on this show.
Well, I'm not plugging in. No, I mean, first off, an excuse to do a lot of Punisher. Second off, you know, we're trying to get hits. This is hot right now. Let's get hits.
6 weeks of Punisher, everyone.
Six weeks of punishment.
Sorry.
Punishment. Also in issue number one, we have Marvel's resident psychologist, Gamma Power, Doc Samson, what up? And obviously someone has to cure the Punisher. I mean, he's crazy.
Well, there's also an element, you know, Nick Fury doesn't know why he's there. Nick Fury didn't call him. S.H.I.E.L.D. did not ask him to be there.
They just, and I get this, I'm not knocking anybody for this. This isn't a knock on Larry Hama or Peter David or anybody else who's doing any of the writing in this, but they really, Nick Fury's character never really comes across. So he seems, a lot of times he seems very inept. A lot of times he seems like he's making silly decisions. And I'm not blaming them because it's a big crossover. It's a big event. Somebody's got to do the job. And in this instance, Nick Fury's going to do the job. You know, like, that's the thing. If this is wrestling, this is WrestleMania. Somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to lose. And in this instance, Nick Fury is going to lose. But this is an instance of what I'm talking about where Nick Fury gets, like, out politically maneuvered by Spook and...
Like, right away.
Right away.
Like, instantly, he's like, what are you doing here? What's this guy doing here? And the Punisher's the one who's like, oh, it's this guy.
Yeah, Spook. And then I also love all throughout the issues when Spook's doing stuff and Nick Fury doesn't like it, he's like, we're going up before a commission about this. Like, this is badass World War II hero Nick fucking Fury, who's like, I swear to God, I'm going to tell your superiors. I mean, like, it's just, I mean, I get that, like, somebody had to do the job, but why Nick Fury wouldn't have hauled off and punched this guy at some point? Although, this guy doesn't. Spook does not survive the crossover. Spoiler alert. He will die. We'll tell you when.
But that's the thing. From the beginning of this showdown between Nick Fury and the Punisher always seems to have the upper hand, because even from the beginning, he knows more about this guy than Nick Fury does. Nick Fury, like, super spy, and the Punisher, who's, like, racked up, you know, with, like, comically large shackles on his arms and legs.
Oh, he is Punisher.
Has more information. So from the beginning, me as somebody who only really knows Nick Fury from, you know, very few comic book appearances I've read him in, and, you know, Samuel L. Jackson in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I'm instantly, Nick Fury just kind of comes across like kind of a chump. Which I know he's not supposed to, and that he's not, but that's the impression from the beginning, as, you know, someone, if somebody were to just pick this up, oh, okay, here's a new, you know, a new title or a new whatever, I'm going to start this from the beginning, I don't know anything about Nick Fury, I would think he was a chump.
Well, I mean, it's hard to disagree, although, again, I don't really blame any of these guys for it, because he just... Somebody's always got to look bad in a crossover. Like, in World War Hulk, I felt like Hulk took out the entire Fantastic Four and all the X-Men, like, way too easily, you know, but it's the nature of the beast. Like, somebody, you know, in another crossover, somebody takes out the Hulk too easily. In another crossover, somebody takes out the Punisher too easily. You know, kind of, you know, it's like that Hotel Lights song that I like so much, you know, where he's like, God, I can't remember the lyrics, it doesn't even matter, but, everything comes around again, you know. Soft rock on the radio, everything comes around again. It's kind of like that with these crossovers. Everything's going to be circular. Everybody will get their chance to shine, and everybody will eventually do the job. This is certainly Punisher's crossover. There's no question about that. He drives the action in every issue except one, which that issue is very weird. We'll get to that in a little bit.
It's a little strange, you might say.
Oh! Somebody did it.
It's not only not Nick Fury's, it's also not really S.H.I.E.L.D.'s time to shine, because, you know, after getting once shown up by, I can't remember the mob lady's name.
Rosalie Carbone.
By Rosalie Carbone's dudes, shortly thereafter, S.H.I.E.L.D. also once again gets shown up by them.
Yeah, I wonder if some of this had to do with the fact that in the early 90s there was a Nick Fury and his Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. title that Bob Harris wrote. Bob Harris would later be editor-in-chief. And it was, like, panned by Wizard, and it was, like, the butt of jokes, by, you know, in lots of places. I've read a few issues of it. It's perfectly fine. I haven't read the whole thing, although I've got it. One of these days, you guys know how that works. But I wonder if that was part of it, was that since they were already kind of seen that way, there was and they didn't have a title of their own, presumably aren't really going much of anywhere, that you could just do that. I don't know, excuse me, what happens to S.H.I.E.L.D. in the immediate aftermath. I know there's a Howard Chaykin, Nick Fury miniseries within, I think, a year of this, maybe two. I don't know exactly when.
Well, I guess also, for there to be a story, S.H.I.E.L.D. has to get shown up by somebody because the Punisher has to get out of S.H.I.E.L.D. custody.
Right, right.
But before he is released, I guess, not really intentionally, he gets put under by Doc Samson.
Yeah, and this super new drug.
Which the Punisher assumes is going to give him some sort of truth serum, but it's some sort of drug to regress him back.
Right.
To the very moment he became the Punisher, to cure him, effectively, of being the Punisher.
I don't really know how that's going to work, but all right, Doc Samson, you're the gamma-powered psychologist, you tell me. But this is another example of where S.H.I.E.L.D. is inept, because, like, even though they have this one house on lockdown, when Doc Samson fulfills Punisher's one request, which is to, you know, go put flowers on his family's grave, the mobsters trail him back and then go to the building next door and then shoot a bunker buster missile into it, disrupting the entire process, and Punisher winds up killing everybody and except Doc Samson. He can't kill Doc Samson, but killing everybody and getting away while still under the effects of this regression drug, which will induce psychosis if we don't cure him soon. Chromium cover.
You can't have a drug in a comic book without there being an anecdote. I almost said an anecdote.
Like, you did say anecdote.
There's a small amusing story to go
right,
on.
Right. No, you did. Yeah, you did. Antidote.
Excuse me. But there's also an element to it of Spook, which is essential to the story moving forward, convincing the Punisher while he's in this induced state that Nick Fury is the one who has killed his family. And he does this by using what looks like Photoshop and emphasizing certain words.
It's he's very excited about, like, Photoshop in 1996.
It's the least subliminal message ever. It's basically just liminal.
Yeah. No, I mean, but he's so gleeful.
He's really excited.
I mean, like, while he's making it.
Nick Fury in this picture.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I understand. It was all new then. Like, his mind would be blown now, where you could just make a meme, a gif meme, anytime you want.
But he makes this picture of Nick Fury with a kite and a gun. And it's the funniest picture ever. I guess it's like, oh, he has the kite from the picnic the Punisher's family was on, and the gun he uses to kill them. So he's just holding this kite and this gun gleefully.
Yeah, and then he says a bunch of weird words, you know, he makes sure and emphasizes certain words so that, you know, and I guess, so the castle hears them, and the subliminal message is implanted, and maybe Spook's helping the mob. I don't remember that ever being explicitly stated.
He works for someone who, later on we find out that he works for somebody who has a vested interest in Fury being taken out of S.H.I.E.L.D., who wants control of S.H.I.E.L.D. and has to get Nick Fury out of the way.
I know that.
Oh, okay.
But what I was saying is, like, maybe
that is.
No, I don't know off the top of my head, but I remember that. What I was trying to say was that perhaps that's why the mob keeps getting over, even though it's never said. Maybe Spook's making things easy for them. Because it's played into his hands, he's got to know they've got a bunker buster missile next door.
Yeah, and his plan doesn't get very far if the Punisher doesn't get out.
Right.
Maybe there was a,
you know,
bit of, I just love some of the vocabulary in this, even though, at one point she calls Samson a gazuni, this mobster lady, which I thought that was the funniest word.
Yeah, that's not a real word.
I know.
I don't think that's a real word.
Well, it is.
It wouldn't count in Scrabble.
It would certainly not count in Scrabble.
But it is funny to call. I'm going to start calling people gazoonies from now on. So on to Daredevil number 344, which, it, you know, takes place in Hell's Kitchen. This is part two of the crossover. Nick Fury goes to his old stomping grounds, and Daredevil is apparently having arguments with himself about whether he's Matt Murdock, whether he's Daredevil, whether Daredevil is dead, or Matt Murdock is dead, and he and Nick Fury get in this like little altercation because neither of them are in their right minds. Nick Fury's chasing his ghost, and like Punisher kills Nick Fury into this crossover. Everybody knows that. I mean, if you don't know, I'm sorry, but that's what's gonna happen. And I mean, if you're like, I didn't know, this is this podcast, and why did you wait until the end? Well, it's 20-year-old comic champ. You know, I mean, you get over it. But and
also,
like,
he gets better.
Oh yeah. He's still dead, guys. That's it for Nick Fury. But like in this, he's just doing all these things that's like, even if I didn't spoil it for you right now, if you read this, like, oh, he's gonna die.
Yeah.
Like he's totally like, it's like he just got off the Omaha, he was just about to get off an Omaha beach, and they're like, what are you gonna do? I gotta picture my sweetheart right here. I can't wait to get back to, you know, what's the mass? We're gonna open a candy shop. That guy's gonna get shot. And that's how Nick Fury's acting. He gets an elongated version of that where he, like, argues with his younger self.
He gets very wistful in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And walks around and lots of ghosts.
And he and Daredevil have a chance to apprehend the Punisher, and it goes poorly because Punisher, but also because neither of them are really in their right minds. Daredevil, like I said, dealing with some kind of acute psychosis, which seems to lead him to believe that the best solution would be to go back to his old suit. His original Daredevil suit. The god-awful yellow and black and I guess the...
Is it strange this is the scarier I thought he's ever looked?
No, I think they did that on purpose. I mean, they did it on purpose. I mean, this is a little confusing, but if you read it, it's a good jumping on point, which to me is the point of most of these crossovers. Because the idea is, we're going to get somebody who's into Punisher, Nick Fury, they're going to get this Daredevil. Let's entice them into getting the next one.
This is the first time I have ever seen Daredevil, to me, look visually, like, menacing or intimidating. Or even scary, because I'm used to, like, you know, the Ben Affleck movie costume. I think earlier on in the 90s, Daredevil that we've talked about before.
On the cartoons?
On
Spider-Man cartoons?
No, the comic books that I think Ann Nesenti's run.
Oh, yeah, in the late 80s, early 90s.
Which that
yeah.
costume is not especially
creepy. It's just that's his regular costume.
I find this one to be much creepier. And so from the cover, just seeing the cover, I was like, whoa, all of a sudden, this is the first time I get that sort of demonic.
It's a bad costume.
I'm not saying it's terrific. I'm not saying I want an action figure of it. I'm saying it's the first one.
Well, you can get one.
I don't want one. That got that.
I kind of do.
That demonic vibe across.
I kind of want one. Check that out.
But it also might be because, as you said, he's being particularly, like, sort of psychotic.
Yeah, well, that's why he goes back to his old costume. And I think it leads to, like, a long storyline in Daredevil about him trying to conquer these demons inside himself. And the Punisher series that will spin off out of this one, Punisher Volume 3, I believe, Daredevil will appear in that suit in, I think, issue number 2 or 3. But all in all, just a solid issue.
I think it's actually my favorite of individual titles.
Hmm. You know, it might be the best done. Ron Wagner, who did the cover and the inside pencils, is great. Ron Wagner and Bill Reinhold on the inks. JMD Matisse always weaves a great story, too. But I love Ron Wagner's work. He's one of the more underrated guys. I mean, Morbius is beautiful when he did it. So,
I just thought it nicely balanced, you know, all three of them. You know, Nick Fury, Daredevil, and the Punisher. All chasing their own ghosts and without being too heavy-handed. Because that's the sort of thing that can get really, really just grown worthy very quickly.
Well, I can definitely see that, which is probably why Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme, number 81, you don't like heavy-handed, but this is very, very heavy-handed. Warren Ellis, Todd DeZago, I don't know how to say it, whichever way, I apologize when I got it wrong. Mark Buckingham on pencils, Keith Sutherland in inks. Heroic Age, little computer coloring, watch out. 90s, guys. We're doing this.
The edge. Cutting edge.
Cutting edge, baby. I think that this issue, I don't know that it was my favorite, but I think it was definitely the best as far as if you were reading this crossover, it gave you the best reason to read the next issue. Basically, Doctor Strange has apparently just come back from some super war, right? Like the all-time magic war, and his normal magic no longer working. So he's into this chaos magic, which as near as I can tell is just changing things into other things.
That really seems to be it. It's transfiguration, right?
Like right. Or transmogrification. Like, yeah. Or, you know, however you want to say it. Turn polymorphing.
Turn watch into a bunny.
Right. My sock is now a caramello bar. Well,
basically, if you've ever taken far too many hallucinogens doing this kind of magic, catastrophe magic?
Yeah, catastrophe magic, that's what it's called.
Basically, he has changed operating systems.
And it's all more organic now, and he's trying to learn, and he keeps saying this weird, like, Sigyz? S-G-Y-Z-G-Y-Z? I mean, I cannot pronounce this word. It really almost has nothing to do with the ongoing crossover, though. It's Doctor Strange walking around being like, I'm glad I'm a human and not in that super magic war anymore. Then it's him arguing with Wong because he let their pal die. And it looked horrific, man.
Oh, my God. I have a thing about birds and, like, winged creatures. And whatever this lady got turned into is just the stuff of freaking nightmares.
But he's...
Same thing with, he has a, I guess it's like his study or something.
His sanctum sanctorum.
That's made of like flesh.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So he's just walking around like it's no big deal.
It's comforting. It has a womb-like feel.
Like, what's wrong with you?
I don't know. Is it that different? I mean, one of your favorite show is probably Farscape. Is it that different from being in Maya?
If Moya were a giant spaceship-sized person, I would say that would be incredibly creepy, but it's so different from a person.
Right.
That it's not scary. This just seems like you did something horrible, some sort of, like, weird science magic crossover experiment to damn people to being your walls.
Yeah, he talks about it singing. I mean,
yes, exactly. That's fucking creepy. Moya's just a living creature that likes having people fly around inside.
But, I mean, that's what you get with Warren Ellis. Warren Ellis is a great writer. He's always going to, you know, this is something in this time he was very good at, you know, at doing guys like Doctor Strange or Dr. Druid or Hellstorm, whereas this had this edgy kind of, he's going kind of, I guess, for a quasi-Vertigo feel with that kind of stuff. But any quasi-Vertigo feel they had, like, it goes away, at least temporarily, because here's Nick Fury, like, ringing the doorbell. Literally ringing the doorbell.
That's really all Nick Fury does in this comic, and that is the only connection it has to the rest of these comics, is stand there and complain about the fact that for such a powerful sorcerer, he can't even have a functioning doorbell. He's really upset about it. Like, I feel like as he's dying, spoiler, we already told you he dies, as he's dying, he's probably thinking about goddamn Dr. Strange's doorbell.
He's also very upset about the ineptitude of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's like, well, we got all this tech, can't find him, figured he'd magic something up. And I have to believe that Dr. Strange would certainly be able to magic something up that would find the Punisher. I don't think this would, you know... I mean, I don't think how this, even at his lowest power, could possibly be a problem.
Could he magic something up to defeat the Punisher? Can
oh, sure, Doctor sure,
Strange
sure.
Take the Punisher.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Doctor Strange is as powerful as you want him to be at any time.
Right, so he could just turn the Punisher's guns into daisies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in the World War Hulk crossover, like, at one point he's talking with Bruce Banner, and Bruce Banner's like, but I'm the most powerful creature there is. He's like, I'm Sorcerer Supreme. I've seen stuff that you could never even dream of. I don't care how powerful you are, you're still a human, which is no more powerful than the most powerful ant to you. I could waggle my little finger in a certain way and your great-grandfather just wouldn't have been born and you just won't exist. So I'm not hearing that. But then other times he's like, I have no power. And then other times he's doing so much magic stuff that somebody will like conk him with a pistol or something.
Which, speaking of.
He goes, you know, I mean, so he's the ultimate deus ex machina. He gets done whatever you need him to get done. And there are great things and bad things about that. I love Doctor Strange, though. We'll have to talk about him sometime. Maybe David Quinn's run. but yeah, he gets stuck up on while he's trying to sort out this this weird disfigured cult that's apparently using radiation magic, like
something like that. They're like a weird humanist. They call themselves like humanists. They're trying to advance society.
Goddamn anarcho primitivists.
Yes. Except with toxic waste.
Yeah, and like Jonah Hex faces.
Yeah, like half faces. Yeah. And one of them sneaks up on him and stabs him in the back. Just, you know, easy as pie. Which my first thought would be
Kitchen knife.
Right.
It's like just a kitchen butcher knife.
My first thought would be, I would think that somebody that powerful would have some sort of, like, protective coating around them.
Well, he does until he doesn't.
Again, new magic, catastrophe magic, still trying it out, trying it on.
Yeah, but also, even if he was at full power, that might work, or it might not. Or, we don't read the next issue, like, the issue ends with him, like, stabbed, and so maybe this is all an illusion that he did in the next, you know.
Well, they decide they're going to eat him as well, because this lady who stabbed him believes that there are, you know, ancient rituals where you eat someone and gain their knowledge and power. And he seems like a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, chow down. But there's no real transition to Ghost Rider 65, because it has nothing to do with that Doctor Strange issue. But this Ghost Rider issue, again, they do a good job with, like, setting this up to where if it's interesting enough to where you'll want to pick up 66, they get all the characters across. And, of course, I mean, Howard Mackey, who I think has been... he's been writing Ghost Rider at this point since it started. So this is 5 years. Plus, he wrote Spirits of Vengeance, which was Ghost Rider and Johnny Blaze. I think he wrote the Johnny Blaze miniseries and the Johnny Blaze series. So he knows what's what in the Ghost Rider universe at this time. Salvador LaRocca with the pencils, who I think he does a pretty good job. Sergio Melia, Kevin Tinsley colors. Janice Chang on the letters. No heroic age for Ghost Rider, apparently. But a spook seems to have come out of Ghost Rider, and he's in this issue, he takes some time out from trying this really weird web to kill Nick Fury that seems like it would have been just easier if he had just killed Nick Fury.
Apparently he can just show up wherever he wants where Nick Fury is.
Right, so he may as well just stab him.
Just take the kitchen knife that lady stabbed Dr. Strange.
Right. When they're done, we're like, hey, when you're done eating Dr. Strange, you're not going to do anything with the knife. Can I use it to kill Nick Fury? And they'd be like, of course, do you promise to anarcho-primitivist the world and kill like 85% of everybody? And they'd be like, oh, of course I do. My name's Spook. But that's not what happened. Instead... Spook's like, no, darn it, I got, you know, first off we get this, like, flashback to,
There's a character called Scarecrow, which I didn't know there was also a Marvel character.
I think there are actually two Marvel Scarecrows.
Really?
Yeah, but don't quote me on that. I mean, we can look it up real quick, but I'm pretty sure there's, like, two Marvel Scarecrows.
There's at least one, in addition to the DC Scarecrow.
Yeah, and he messes around with Ghost Rider.
And there's a bomb, and then they can't detonate it. And, they do get out of this, but my thing with Ghost Rider, and I won't talk too long about this, but there's something inherently amusing about him being a grinning skeleton that sometimes takes me out of the seriousness of whatever is happening. And also, too, anything that happens involving his human host. Because I have a hard time believing that people picking up a comic book with a guy with a flaming skeleton for a face...
Yeah.
...cares too much about this guy's love life with his girlfriend.
Well, I think actually they did. I think Howard Mackey did a good job over these 60 issues, you know, making Dan catch a guy that not only you could care about, but you would relate to. He was a younger guy, had a lot of power. I mean, it's the Spider-Man trick.
What I was going to say is obviously they do manage to get that across because this, you know... We're still talking about the character now.
There's fantastic character, fantastic reboot of the character in the 90s. And indeed, there were two Marvel Scarecrows. Looked it up, everybody. Don't want to leave you hanging. But one, eventually their name becomes the Straw Man. So that is not the Scarecrow that we see here.
Does he start poor arguments?
No, but he looks scary as hell. I would show the listeners, but they can't see him. But
you have the internet. You have to. Yeah. You wouldn't be listening to
here this. He is for this, like right here.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. I'll just vouch for this being scary, everybody.
Some crazy 1970s Marvel horror stuff. I got to get my hands on that Straw Man crap. Have nightmares for like 3 fucking days.
But then it's amazing how quickly, you know, like I said, I sometimes find it amusing to see this grinning skeleton say these very serious things.
Right.
But then when he really turns it on, all of a of a sudden you're like, oh shit, this is terrifying.
Well, yeah, I mean, all of a sudden it's like, this is a flaming skeleton on a motorcycle swinging a chain at you, letting you know that indeed he is the spirit of vengeance and you will be paying for everything you've done wrong via the penance stare.
Which we will see a couple times.
Yes.
Once in this issue.
Right. But, Spook, you know, he tries to capture old Dan Ketch and it goes wrong, mostly because of the Punisher's intervention.
Which, the Punisher's always intervening.
Yeah, I mean, he drives the crossover, as well he should. At the end of this issue, they do a good job of showing why Punisher would care about Ghost Rider. And he ultimately, you know, it's like, maybe I could use this against Fury. And I love when he breaks into the computers because Punisher's got somebody from inside S.H.I.E.L.D. that's like feeding him information now and telling him things. We don't know who that is yet. But Punisher doesn't quite trust him and everything, but, you know.
Well, it's weird to see the Punisher ask someone for help. Like, when he asked Daredevil for help, it just seems, I know that he doesn't always work entirely alone, but that's the first time I've ever read him specifically asking someone for assistance. And at this point, he's also still going like,
yeah, he doesn't know who any of these people are.
Yeah. He doesn't know this Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
He's starting to really seriously lose his grip on even what his own version of reality is.
Right, but that doesn't stop him from blowing Spook away at the end of this issue, even though it's pretty confusing because it's right after Spook gets the penance stare, while Ghost Rider's like, I'm not going to let you kill him, but then he just gets killed anyway.
And also, too, you're like, well, then what was all this leading up to this? If he's just going to get taken out in a fairly, I know it's not really anticlimactic, but the fact that you're like, wait, was that him? Oh, he's just gone now?
Yeah, I mean, I had to look it up to make sure, and I mean, you know, I don't know what happened, but otherwise, I mean, a pretty solid issue.
No, absolutely. Once again, this was my first Ghost Rider comic, and I would definitely pick up another one.
Well, we'll have to look at it, because earlier it was even better. When it, you know, I mean, not that this was bad, but Tashira and Mackie in the start, they're on fire. And you get to see everybody. Spider-Man shows up, Punisher shows up, and probably in a few months, maybe for Halloween, we'll do Rise of the Midnight Suns or... And get involved with some of the 90s Marvel horror superhero stuff. Because I like horror, but I like it tinged with a little bit of heroism. Punisher's still on the loose, which leads us to Incredible Hulk number 433, which Peter David wrote, and this is part of it. He had a very long, long run on the Incredible Hulk. And when I talked to Paul O'Connor about 70s versus 90s, he said that one of the things the 90s lacked that the 70s had was like long tenures. Long reigns on a title for a creator. And I forgot to mention Peter David, who I think writes Hulk until like 98. I think he started in like 88, 87. Somebody else knows. Somebody will comment, like, let me tell you. But I don't want to take the time to look it up right now. But again, I mean, you got Terry Dodson did a good cover, does it good on the inside. Gary Martin does the inks. Glynis Oliver on colors. Richard Starkings on letters. Good stuff. Starts out, you know, it's a strong issue from start to finish.
I really like this one as well, although it was a little confusing for me because I did not... I accidentally read the issue of Hulk after this, where it's Nick Fury's funeral, and it was a lot like the experience I had watching Godfather 3 when it was on those two big VHS tapes, and I accidentally watched the second disc first. And it would not have been any better, that movie, had I watched it in the correct order, but both of these very solid issues, presuming that you read them in the correct order, considering the next issue of Hulk is Nick Fury's funeral and starts out with the Hulk feeling guilty, having a guilty dream about Nick Fury being dead, which again was confusing to me because he was still alive.
Right.
My favorite thing about this this issue is that the Hulk don't give a fuck about anything.
No, I mean, the Hulk is definitely, you know, for the most part out for himself, and he's been burned too often by Nick Fury and too often by the other superheroes, and he's going through a weird time where apparently when he gets too worked up, he turns into Bruce Banner. And that's an interesting hook, and I think that's one of the things that they got over really well that would make somebody, if they weren't picking up Hulk, might be like, oh, that's neat. I want to see where this goes. But ultimately, Nick Fury asked Punisher to help, or asked Hulk to help round up the Punisher and says, hey, you know, he's crazy. And Hulk's like, listen, Nick, you lied to me a million times. At least the Punisher is what the Punisher is.
And also, too, there are two separate occasions in which people beg the Hulk for help, including there is a crime lord guy, I don't know specifically who he is.
Right.
Who the Hulk is going after for something that happened in the previous issue, and the Punisher, overhearing the Hulk talk about it, somehow gets it confused in his increasingly, deranged mind that he also had something to do with his family being killed. So they both converge on this guy at the same time. And the Hulk had been trying to get a confession out of this guy, and he, of course, he basically makes fun of the Hulk for being too civilized now, and also for looking silly because he's wearing shorts and flip-flops. It's very funny.
It's all they had. It's all they had at Big and Tall. That's what he said.
So he also, once the Punisher shows up, begs the Hulk to help him against the Punisher, to no avail. Hulk still doesn't care.
Yeah, I mean, and then that's Hulk. I mean, that's the way Hulk, you know, really when done best should be. And I would pick up the next issue. I remember being very interested when this came out in Nick Fury's funeral. And I probably would have kept reading for a while, but I would have read Hulk for years because Peter David was just, you know, it was a very good run. You know, it never got worse than solid. It was always solid to very, very good. So you can't complain about that for a 10, 12 year, however long, you know, run it was. It was over a decade. So, you know, you got to take that. Just like you got to take Double Edge Omega, Chromium cover once again, folks. Chromium cover on Double Edge Alpha.
Which I know took a lot of flack because they got overused in the 90s, but I really like these. I like the covers a lot. They just look insane.
I like them too, I'm not going to lie, when done well. And I'll show you the best one ever. I should just order it so you, because to really appreciate it, you got to have them in your hand. But Exo Metal War number 0 is probably the best one that they ever made. It's a joke. That's a Joe Quesada cover, by the way. But Joe Quesada's not involved in Double Edge Omega, where all the chickens are coming home to roost. And we forgot to mention that in Daredevil, Punisher takes out Fury's son, Scorpio. That's how he draws Fury out. And now in this issue, apparently, for whatever reason, they're going to put Scorpio in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. now. And he gets even more outmaneuvered by the Punisher than Fury did. And he winds up...
That's the thing. At one point, he's trying to tell his dad, you can't take part in hunting down the Punisher because you're the one he's after, not us. And Nick Fury at one point thinks to himself, like, God, you've been outfought, outthought, out everything by the Punisher at every turn. Like, he gets mad at his son for basically being incompetent.
Right.
And he's like, I gotta go do it now, you know, which that's what you get for naming a kid Scorpio. What? Plus, I'm sorry, like, that kid just comes across, I mean, he's like a 40-year-old guy, I'm calling him a kid, but he acts a little bit like a petulant child. He's just kind of a jerk.
Well, I don't know his relation to, or he may very well be the same person, but Scorpio is a S.H.I.E.L.D. villain who I know is related to Nick Fury, but I thought it was his brother. I don't know how that works, so off the top of my head. Somebody else does.
So this is not, like, a long-standing character. His son, like, is not...
No, what I'm saying is I don't know. There's a long-standing S.H.I.E.L.D. character, an old-time S.H.I.E.L.D. villain called Scorpio.
I guess I just assumed that his character was, like, Nick Fury's son in general. Like, a canon, I suppose.
Yeah, I think he is canon. What I'm trying to say is, I don't know if this is the same Scorpio that's the villain, like, from old-timey when Jim Steranko was doing S.H.I.E.L.D. in the 60s. It was a different guy named Scorpio. But even the old Scorpio was related to Nick Fury. Like, I just can't remember off the top of my head. So that's all I'm trying to get across right now. Okay, thank you. but you keep muddying this up. I'm like, all I'm saying... and I really should know. I lose some cred for not. I used to know, and I'll top of my head now. Jam too much Double Edge Omega.
It's about knowing about both scarecrows.
I did know about those scarecrows.
That's what took that information out of me. Too much mental energy.
Like, you're right. You're right. But yeah, he winds up getting more outfought, more outmaneuvered, and this is where he loses his eye, right? Because
this is where he loses his eye because Punisher, getting inside information once again from someone in S.H.I.E.L.D., learns that there is a warehouse full of these Fury bots.
LMDs, life model decoys, said it like six times.
I just like calling them Fury bots.
No, LMDs, right. Please.
LMDs.
Thank you.
So he goes to destroy the entire stock of them. So Scorpio is like, we've still got one left, and takes its eye patch off and puts it on.
Good idea having a like real eye patch on this like robot.
Right. It's for the realism. That's how it really convinces you. They only put one robot eye in it.
You're right. Good idea. Good idea.
And they still get blown up by the Punisher.
Yeah. I mean, and Dum Dum Dugan's telling the whole time, like, this is a trap. 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 But they go into the trap anyway because Punisher's going over, folks. It doesn't, you know, he's Triple H in this bad boy. So you can't stop him. And, Daredevil is trying to hunt him down. Ghost Rider's trying to hunt him down. They wind up teaming up trying to hunt him down.
They take out some mooks.
Mooks. The mooks get taken out. Eventually, like, because Ghost Rider tells Daredevil that he can cure the Punisher with his pen and stare. If he gives it to him, it should undo the psychosis. I don't know the physics, the metaphysics, the metabiology behind this. But okay, sure, it's fine. I have no problem with that. But he's got to change back to Dan Ketch to get close. When he changes to get close, Nick Fury winds up, like, tranking him.
Well, he comes up right behind him, and then, I guess, I don't know if in human form he has some sort of karate skills, but he kicks Nick Fury, like, he's out of instinct. That's what happens when you sneak up on people, everybody.
Yeah.
The Punisher ends up shooting you.
Right.
Which I loved earlier on, there's a moment where he's trying to lure S.H.I.E.L.D. out, and he sends a Punisher bot, which he's taken, I guess, one of the Fury bots. I'm sorry, LMDs.
This is why you can't call them Punisher or Fury bots. This is why they're life model decoys. See how much fucking simpler that is?
You're right. They're like, how do we know? Because there have been false Punisher sightings all over the world.
Right.
How do we know it's the real Punisher? I'm like, well,
He
shot two muggers in a litter box. All right, it's the Punisher.
Which really should have led them to know that it was not the Punisher.
Because he would not shoot a litter box.
The only time I known that he's done that, he was like drugged. He's not in his right mind. So I guess maybe they might have thought, well, he's fucked up. But really, I would have been like, nah, it doesn't sound like something that, you know, is going on right now.
Well, I guess you should be in S.H.I.E.L.D. Maybe you wouldn't be taken out by some random mob ladies.
Maybe I would have seen that one lady with the blonde hair was feeding Punisher inside information the whole time. And even though Spook's dead, she's going ahead with the plan, and Contessa winds up catching her and killing her.
It does take them an awfully long time to figure out that somebody from, like, the heart of their organization, which I don't know how high up this lady is, but
she's got to be really high to be talking to Nick Fury.
She's obviously pretty high up, yeah.
And what's her name? Give it in the notes. I know she has blonde hair. It's ridiculous. What?
Lockhart. Her name is Lockhart.
Yeah, Lockhart.
And she describes herself as Spook's failsafe.
Right.
We don't find out exactly who they're working for, but she and Spook were working for the same shadowy organization. And then Fury gets distracted by Ghost Rider.
Punisher shoots him, blows him away, and in Fury's last act, he manages to hit Punisher with the trank dart that will, like, put him down so they can give him the cure. Although Ghost Rider also hits him with the pin and stare, so he's, like, double cured.
Which, you and I were talking about it a little bit before we did this, but I would really have liked to have seen the aftermath of this. I would have loved to have seen what effect, if any, the penance there would actually have on the Punisher. in his right mind, not in his right mind? You know, what does it mean for him to get it? What does it mean for him to feel all the lives he unnecessarily took? Or, you know, he describes it, Ghostwriter says, "We've perished needlessly because of you." Well, in his mind, none of them have.
I mean, there might be a couple where, like, he shot a guy in a truck and that truck wound up crashing into his store and killing a clerk or something. But, yeah, I don't think the Punisher would be super affected by this. Like, yeah, I did it. It had to be done. Why weren't you doing it? You're an idiot. Kill somebody, Ghost Rider. That's basically Punisher's mantra. Kill somebody. You're an idiot. Why aren't you killing these people? You, kill them.
Including probably Ghost Rider himself. You probably tell Ghost Rider. I'm sure he does. Probably.
No, I mean, he and Ghost Rider get along all right, you know, for the most part. Certainly better than he and Daredevil, or he and Spider-Man. Ghost Rider doesn't necessarily see what he does as bad as long as he only kills bad guys.
It's because he likes the skull.
Yeah, it's, you know, he's Skull Core. Right.
They should perhaps form a wrestling tag team.
Oh, man.
I could get behind that.
Yeah. Castle Flame.
I mean, we know the skull. I mean, you talked about the skull being important earlier. We also have a moment earlier on where he basically carjacks a guy who's too dumb to know he's being carjacked. He's too starstruck by the Punisher. It turns out he's the Punisher's biggest fan.
And he's drunk as hell.
Conveniently wearing a Punisher t-shirt, driving drunk. And the first thing the Punisher does, obviously, is kill him. The second thing, obviously, is take his t-shirt.
Yeah. And incidentally, I'm wearing a Punisher t-shirt right now, so let's hope that Frank Castle doesn't decide to kill me and take it, although I'm not driving drunk. This is a stationary podcast, folks. As far as the aftermath, later on in 6 Weeks of Punishment, I'm going to do the first few issues of the Punisher series that followed this, so we'll see if they say anything about the Pen and Stare. But all in all, I think this crossover accomplished what it was supposed to do, which was set a new status quo for the Marvel Edge books. Supposed to make you feel like anything can happen and give you a reason to check out each of these books, which they probably did. I think all of these books were at least solid.
Oh, absolutely. There's not really a bad issue, I would say, in the bunch.
No, and I think all the problems that I have with it were necessary because it exists.
Yeah.
You know, Nick Fury had to act a lot less, like, a lot less confident than you would see him when he's running the troops in a crossover in his own title because he had to do the job. And the treatment of the Punisher, I mean, spot on by just about everybody. Of course, Larry Hama wrote a bunch of Punisher stuff and a bunch of Batman stuff, which, you know, has its similarities. So he certainly got the character. Excuse me, but he was handled very consistently, especially considering that, you know, there's like 5 writers on this.
No, absolutely, and I think they all do, as you said, a good job of setting their own new standards up and also integrating the ongoing story in them, which I imagine is a tricky thing to do.
But and it is a tricky thing to do, but that's the theoretically it's the point of every crossover, at least at that time. Now it's probably different, but, you know, because crossovers never seem to stop, but at this time the idea was that you'd, you'd pick this up. You know, you'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to see what happens and see if Doctor Strange gets unstabbed in the next issue or...
Not eaten.
Right.
Maybe he can turn them into food.
Possibly. Maybe he'll turn them into caramello bars, as I mentioned earlier.
Maybe he'll add them to his wall.
Maybe. Probably not.
I have trouble sleeping thinking about that wall.
You did that to yourself. You did that one to yourself. Well, I had a good time. Had a good time talking a little Punisher. There'll be more Punisher to talk about. Emily's going to do a little Punisher 2099, part of the 6 Weeks of Punishment. This weekend, I'm going to do a little Punisher Batman. We'll do Dead Man's Hand later. We'll cross over with LongboxGraveyard.com. You get Marvel Super Action number 1. I mean, I can't even remember it all. I have it all written down, folks, but not in front of me. Because I want to focus on Over the Edge for you. The Legions of the Unspoken.
Not punishment.
No, not at all. It is, but it isn't. It's 6 weeks of punishment, folks, and we've had a good time. Thanks for spending this hour with us. I'm Dean Compton for Emily Scott. We will see you next time here at the Unspoken Decade.